Welcome to the Klamath Tribes podcast. Today we are talking to James Moore, the new chief of police or public safety for the Klamath Tribes. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me today.
So let's backtrack a little bit on your experience that led us to this point in your career.
Yeah. So I've been doing law enforcement going on about 7 years now. I worked for the Yurok Tribe, the Hoopa Valley Tribe, the Bear River Tribe. I graduated from the Basic Police Academy at College of the Redwoods in Eureka, California. And then I transferred over here. I've been here a little over a year now. I've went through the process and got fully DPSST certified in the state. And I mean, that's a pretty good representation. I'm also a Yurok tribal member. I have two kids, two daughters, I'm excited to be here.
So the police department, or should we say public safety? How do we refer to our department?
Whatever's easier for you. The official term is the Klamath Tribes Department of Public Safety.
Where are we going with the department? We've been waiting for certain things to develop so that we can be an enforcement department.
Yeah, so we're actually really close for that. For us to have a full state powers, which means that we have the same powers, authorities, and recognition as any other state officer, there are certain steps that we have to take. So one of the requirements is that all of our officers go through the DPSST Academy and have DPSST certifications, which we've already completed. The other step is that we have to make adopt the provisions of Senate Bill 412 and put that into law. Just recently present to General Counsel the Senate Bill 412 Implementation Code and a Torts Claims Ordinance. We'll be going back over that legal framework on the 16th, actually, of this month, to present it to General Counsel again, to have Ed Goodman, our tribal attorney, to maybe explain a few questions that tribal membership had about it.
So on the timeline, where are we at to get it solidified?
I would say that if General Counsel decides to adopt that into law, tribal law, that as far as we will have met all of the compliance measures of Senate Bill 412, so we would have all the powers, authorities, we'd be able to carry, be able to make arrests. We'd have the 16th if everything goes well.
All right. And when that does happen, what's next?
Well, we still have a lot of things going on. So we're still in the development of getting a public safety building together. It is projected, hopefully, that by the end of spring, we'll have that building up.
Where will that be?
It's going to be located next to the Child Development Center right there on Tribal Health. I'm sure people may have noticed that they started some site prep there. Clearing trees, getting the area ready for the building to go up. We have selected a modular company. They have freed up the federal funds for us to get the site engineers and everything. So there's a lot of exciting things happening. We're finalizing a few things on the master contract.
And when will that building be done?
It's hard to make a specific deadline, but it's projected, hopefully, that by the end of spring.
So when you become this enforcement agency, police department, we're going to bring on some more police members, public safety officers?
Yeah, so actually we're currently in the process of hiring more officers. Unfortunately, it's a lengthy process. So we did advertise and fly three positions, two fish and game officers and one police officer position. We've did interviews. We have put some conditional job offers out for those positions. Now, with the conditional job officer, it's contingent upon they complete additional steps before we issue them a start date. So we are going to require all of our officers to pass a physical passed the ORPAT, which is the Oregon Physical Aptitude Test, have them go through a full criminal background check and a full psych evaluation prior to giving them a start date. The reason for that is that we want them to be ready to go directly into the academy with that start date. If everything goes well, there are openings in the January Police Academy. So I'm hoping that we'll be able to send candidates to that academy.
And again, how many officers are we looking to add?
So we just advertised and went through the whole hiring process for one police officer and two fish and game officers. And hopefully we'll have an RFE out for another police officer position soon.
What do we currently have on staff?
Right now, it's just me. And then I also have an emergency manager and an office assistant.
So we need to get on this real quick.
Yes.
So absolutely. You're not overwhelmed.
Yes, absolutely. That's one of the biggest priorities. Unfortunately, it's a really big time investment really big investment to get police officers hired and trained and everything. So which is one of the reasons why we're making sure to have these conditional requirements in place, because we don't want to, waste 5-6 months trying to get somebody trained that might not make it through the whole process.
So when the department is up and running with a full staff, are we going to take control of policing Chiloquin in the tribal areas?
So that's one of the areas that we'd like to take over. It's a really interesting topic. Obviously, the city of Chiloquin has expressed interest in making a policing contract with us to take over the city. One of the benefits is with us having that state certification is we are recognized as state officers. So we do have law enforcement jurisdiction throughout the entire state of Oregon. So if we did get called to a call for service anywhere in Chiloquin, we could respond and take that call. That wouldn't make us primary jurisdiction necessarily. That would be something that we'd have to work out with the Sheriff's Department and 911 communications.
And how has that dialogue been going?
It's been going well. Obviously, we don't have any formal agreements in with the Sheriff's Office yet. We've kind of been waiting to, get ourselves up to capacity so that we can show that we could take over this area, service area. Obviously, we don't have the capacity, manpower to do that currently. And also, we were waiting to see the outcome with the new sheriff-elect to make that new agreement.
Mm-hmm. It'll be a transition. I would think that it would be a gradual transition with the sheriff's department.
Yes. So obviously, I would say the idea is not to get rid of law enforcement services in our area. Right. The idea is that there is a lack of manpower within the entire county. And so we would like to help make sure that, if somebody has that call for service, that somebody's going to show up, and to drastically reduce those response times for law enforcement services is the idea. So I wouldn't say that necessarily we're trying to run out the other agencies. We're just trying to make sure that when somebody says, hey, I need officer assistance, that they're getting it immediately.
So would the Sheriff's Department always be involved in some respects, even if we are the governing or the lead agency?
So if we took over primary jurisdiction, which if we had the capacity and to do, and we made an MOU with the Sheriff's Department, there wouldn't be a need for them to come in.
Sure, they appreciate that.
Yes, I don't foresee a lot of resistance with something like that, because we do need the, with the low capacity of personnel and things like that, that they need the help.
That's good. This is all good stuff. This would be the first time in how long when was the last time Chiloquin actually had a police presence on property, in the city boundaries?
I do know that, prior to termination, that the Klamath tribes did have a law enforcement program. So prior to termination,
we're going back to,
I don't have the specific dates on top.
Yeah. That's quite a few decades ago though, right?
They were reinstated in 1986, I believe. And I think it was about 30 years. So we're, I guess about 50 years.
1953.
So
Thank you, sir.
So, I mean, that was in 1953. Up until 1953, they had their own law enforcement. The tribe did.
How big was it? Do you know the, we have an idea of what we had then and what we'll need now?
That's something I want to research because I do want to make sure that those individuals do get recognized for their service. I think that's really important to show the history there, and I'd like to make sure that they do get recognized for their service.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Then we have the idea, not the idea, then we have the situation of logistics, communications. We need to get a switchboard, whatever you call it, when people call in.
Yeah, so, I mean, as far as that goes, the 911 communications does provides dispatching services for all the local entities. So at least initially starting out, it's more cost-effective and makes more sense to utilize their services, at least until we've had a chance to develop a more robust program.
And if arrests are made and somebody is, given a fine or charge, do we handle the charges in the prosecution process in our tribal court, or does it go to the county court?
So one of the next big steps after we get these state powers, everything, is actually developing our own tribal law and order code. What that does is if we do get a criminal code for the tribe, that gives us the ability to put those citations or, violations through our own tribal court, which is something that we've been working on. It's another big project that we need to get completed. In the meantime, obviously, if somebody's cited with a state violation or arrested for a state violation, then they would be going through the local state court system.
But anything that comes as a city issue of violations, we're going to try to take through our own court.
So as far as putting somebody through our tribal courts, it would have to be somebody who falls under our jurisdiction. So it would have to be most likely a tribal member that would be cited into tribal court. It would be another option. One of the benefits of sending our people through our own court system is we have the ability to maybe, give them like treatment programs and things like that, and we get to have a little bit more control over that process. As far as, if it's a non-tribal member, most likely how we would have to handle that situation is through the state system.
That's an interesting challenge. You've got two different citizens there, tribal and non.
One of the other benefits though developing that law and order code and having that tribal court system is we can have the local DA refer those cases back to our system as well for our tribal membership.
Is there going to be more leniency in our court? Is it going to be strictly following the law? Or do you think maybe it won't be as strict because of tribal relations and understanding?
Yeah, so I wouldn't consider it more lenient.
Maybe that's a bad term.
But
some people might ask that, right?
So I wouldn't consider it more lenient. Depending on what the tribe decides to set for some of these violations, it could honestly have more punishment maybe or more stipulations attached to it, depending on what the tribe decides ultimately. But the benefit is that it is, culturally sensitive, right? So there's things that we could do because, like, if you go through a local treatment program, they might have you talk to a psychologist or something like that. But with our tribal court system, maybe we could have them speak with a tribal elder and have them do some sweats and some things like that that would be more culturally appropriate to maybe help, and bring that sense of community back into it, which in my experience is usually a little bit more effective of a program. The idea of the local state system is more based around being more of a deterrent, where it's focused on the punishment aspect of it, where I would say that a tribal judicial system is focused more on the rehabilitation of its membership.
And that's a that's a good thing, to address the problems beyond punishment, but rehabilitation as a strong way to address problems.
Yeah, I think it's a big, it's important to get these individuals, you know, integrated back into the community, right? It's a huge, that's the goal of our program.
Have you been in contact with other tribal police on how to set up your force and go forward?
I do work, so we do have a meeting where we get to sit down with some of the local police chiefs. The other 9 tribes in Oregon, they do have a meeting where we get to talk with the other tribal chiefs of police. We do kind of talk about their process and what setting up their program look like and such.
Mm-hmm.
We do reach out to those other tribes.
Do all the tribes in the state have a police presence of their own, tribal police?
I hate to throw out a specific number, but I do believe out of the 9 tribes in Oregon, I think 7 of them are in compliance with DPSST and have those state powers.
There's also a new liaison for the state police that took over the new position. Have you been in touch with him?
Yeah, so we work with, Glendon Smith, he's the tribal liaison for OSP. We work pretty closely with him for a lot of matters. Yeah, he's super helpful.
Mm. And how are you feeling taking on this new position?
I'm very excited. I'm hopeful for the future of the program. I see a lot of good things coming out of this program. There's a lot of opportunities here. It is a big task, so I hope that I can do a good job serving the community and meet their expectations.
Chiliquin is also in a transition as a community building. A new town hall is on the agenda. So you have a bigger town maybe on the horizon of people coming here to live. We're increasing housing. All challenges for you.
Yeah, I mean, I think that seeing that economic development is a really positive thing, for the community and for the tribe. I don't foresee it being a problem. Honestly, it's good to see that people are excited and about their community, I don't see any issues coming out of that.
Community outreach. That would be a big part of your job, letting people know you're here, what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Community outreach is a big proponent in that. So we try to show up to as many special events as possible. If there's any special events that they would like to see us attend, we've showed up to some football games for the youth. We show up to the powwows, health row. Any community event, if we get invited to, we're going to make an effort to attend. We go to the local school system and have done presentations on tribal law enforcement with the elementary school. So that's a really big proponent is the community outreach. Hopefully soon, we're in the process of designing decals for our vehicles. So hopefully soon we'll have the decals on our vehicles and people will see that tribal police logo on our vehicles. Displayed.
How many do we have?
So we currently have 4 units. So one is an unmarked, low profile. The other one's a traditional, police cruiser. And then we also have 2 trucks that are for our fish and game officers for patrolling out in the woods.
What about traffic enforcement? Are you going to be involved with that?
I don't know if that's a big priority on our list initially.
A little speeding going on sometimes around.
Sure.
That point where you go from 50 to 30.
Yeah. So, obviously with us having full state powers, if we get that, those ordinances passed and have full state powers, we would have the capabilities to enforce traffic regulations if we observe a violation. And, you know, obviously if that becomes a big community concern is the speeding, we could apply for grants and trainings and maybe get a radar out there to address some of those issues. I think it, you know, ultimately, you know, the direction that we end up going is really dependent on what the community deems their concerns and issues that they would like to see addressed.
And Highway 97, are you going to be, if there's an accident, will you be also responding to those?
If we're requested, we could respond to those. Yes, absolutely. I mean, that's the community safety's the big, right, concern. So any way that we can help the public is, you know, is what our goals are.
Yeah, because sometimes if there's an accident close to the casino or that area, you have to wait for a state police response. And they look a little thin there on the highway.
Yeah, so they have, obviously, their jurisdiction is the entire state of Oregon. So they are spread pretty thin. It's pretty similar with the sheriff's department. They have the whole county to coverage. And I can't remember how many bodies they have on staff, but it's a pretty significant area to try and cover with such a small staff. So it does make it difficult. So with us, you know, developing this program, we'll be able to help alleviate that, and hopefully the local community here will get a quicker and better response from law enforcement moving forward.
Are you going to be adding anything in the way of emergency ambulance response or, you know, that kind of assistance?
That's a little outside my wheelhouse. That might be something that the tribe decides to try and develop moving forward.
Could be a life and death situation on response. You can leave Chiloquin, go to 5 miles instead of waiting for somebody to go all the way from Klamath Falls with an ambulance.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm sure that, you know, if that's something the tribe wants to, you know, it's a little out of my wheelhouse. I'm more in the law enforcement, but I could see the benefits of having a program like that.
And fish and game enforcement, that's a big challenge because we've talked about this before. You have a large area to cover.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, obviously one of my priorities with the fish and game program is obviously to try and identify funds so that we can get more officers in that program. I think that, you know, we need more officers to be able to fill that position. As far as my public safety officers, you know, if fish and game does need assistance with that, I expect my officers to assist fish and game with their calls for service if they have anything going on like that. That's definitely, we need more staff.
Is poaching a problem?
I mean, it's always a problem. Sure. Yeah. That's one of the big, probably the biggest complaint that we do get with the fish and game side of things, is people maybe taking more than they have issued tags, things like that.
Because we have a declining mule deer population, the pressure's on from hunting as well as just a lack of population.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the biggest things they're doing to address that is making sure that the habitat, that they have good habitat for that to support those deer populations, because that is another factor that contributes to that decline.
How much is the hunting adding to the decline? Is it an impact?
I'm not sure. I don't have any statistics on that, so I couldn't definitively say.
Something to be considered, though.
I'm sure that it does play a role to some degree.
I don't know. I'm not a hunter. I'm out of my realm here. But, you know, I've heard people say.
Yeah. Well, you know.
There used to be a lot more deer that was hunted, and they were hunted a little too strongly in certain areas.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, as far as having additional fish and game officers that we might, that will be able to help maybe alleviate some of that stress put on that population, especially with our officers, our fish and game officers are going to be state certified, so they'll have all those state powers and authority. That doesn't change anything for tribal membership. If tribal membership's out there utilizing their treaty rights, everything with our fish and game would be dealt with tribally. But it gives us a tool to address, you know, some of the non-tribals out there, you know, poaching and, you know, hunting out season, things like that. That'll give us a means to address some of those issues, because I really don't think that the issue is tribal members out there hunting. It's the non-tribals that are going out there and poaching and taking.
Something you probably want to look at more statistically to confirm.
Yeah.
It's a gray area right now.
Yeah.
Who's doing what, where, and how much?
Yeah.
Those are the challenges of a new police department and fish and game enforcement in this area. What about fish, too? You know, we have the over... You got to be careful about overfishing certain trout that are endangered.
Yeah, fishing is definitely another call for service that we do get. You know, and, you know, one of the interesting topics that's going to come up soon is with the salmon returning, you know, to the river systems, and now it's we're going to have salmon here locally. Is it'll be interesting to see, you know, what regulations and things like that get put in place.
Yeah, well, the salmon might have a little trouble getting over here. We still have some dams to deal with. Link River and Keno are challenges for the salmon to even get this far. We might be a little overambitious in thinking they might be here. Might take some years.
Yeah, I got to go out with the Coulter and Heritage a while ago, and they actually started to see them by Spencer Creek.
Mm-hmm.
So they have them documented there. So that, you know, that's exciting.
Yeah. But to get to these tributaries and headwaters up here, they got to go through a very toxic lake.
Yeah.
We're getting off course here a little bit, but I'm just saying, you know, whether salmon will make it this far is a question. Maybe Fish and Game doesn't have to worry about that too much at this point.
Yeah, not currently.
But we do have our red band trout and the bull trout, which, you know, those are the species that are here.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, the big goal of the fishing game is to protect all of those cultural resources for the tribe.
Excellent. Well, do you have anything else to add that we haven't covered?
I think that was pretty extensive.
Well, congratulations on your new position as the Chief of Police of the Klamath Tribes, James Moore, joining us today on the Klamath Tribes podcast. Thank you, James.
Hey, thank you. You have a great day.
I'm Ken Smith. You've been listening to the Klamath Tribes podcast. We'll talk again. Yeah!